Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here as always with the Robin to the Batman. The what? I don't know.
You're the movie guy.
The Costello to the Abbott.
If I'm Robin, I don't want to wear what Robin wears.
No, well,
that's my issue.
You know, I'd love for the Batman and Robin, I'd love for them to do a reboot of Batman. Not like they've done a reboot, but I mean,
they've done multiple
re-envisioning.
Reboots.
Every time they do a reboot, it's like he's the Dark Knight brooding. I want to see the blue costume, I want to see the tights.
No.
I think they could do it. If Marvel can do colorful, superheroes, and Batman can be colorful.
Nolan's Dark Knight, that was it, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah, it was great. It was great. I'm just saying they're going to keep rebooting. Yeah. Why not do some kind of throwback Super Friends kind of thing?
Because no actor wants to wear those blue costumes.
You're probably right.
Do you know what's really strange today is that we're recording this in the afternoon.
Yeah.
We normally record it like first thing in the morning. So I actually feel awake.
Usually I feel more awake in the morning than I do in the afternoon. I start fading.
Well, I'm the opposite way around. Okay. If we could record at 10 p.m. at night, I'm like live wire.
Whoa.
I'm ready to go.
So. Okay. We should actually do that sometime just as a special.
Like a special late night.
Yeah.
Late night in the Spurgeon College library.
For the church after dark. Yeah, we could do that.
Fueled by Coke Zero.
Yeah. Speaking of superhero movies, not really superhero, but movies. So we finally saw Despicable Me 4.
We did.
We'd been teasing that we were going to go, our families, together to see this movie, and we finally did. And it was okay.
It was okay. It was like, the storyline was fine.
Yeah.
The funniest parts were the minions, but...
Oh, always.
Despicable Me. Yeah. Like, I feel like they just need to stop the Despicable Me and just make
and
minion
just
movies.
Do minions.
Yeah.
Well, I have not. I don't know if I've kept up with the minions. Like, what do the minions do in their movies?
They just want to go crazy.
But I mean, are there actual plot points? Like, it's hard for me to picture them. I mean, see them as comic relief. It's hard for me to see them as like part of an actual story.
Their big thing is they just want to be with a villain. So they just want to be a villain's.
They want to be minions.
And so the whole plot is always that they want to find the big mega villain boss, and they want to serve as minions to the mega villain boss.
Okay.
So in senses, Despicable Me concentrates on the villain, not the minions, and the minions concentrate on the minions, not the villain. So I just feel like they just need to concentrate on the minions, mainly because that was the funniest part of the whole movie.
The minions. Well, they had like superhero minions. They were like Fantastic Four or something. Yeah. They became mega minions.
Mega minions.
Yeah. But the movie itself, I mean.
It was okay.
It was all right.
I was partly struggling because I was next to my child that does not sit particularly still.
That doesn't sit still.
Mm-hmm. There was a couple of whispers to her along the lines of, sit still. And she was sitting next to...
Was she watching the movie?
She was watching the movie. So this particular child of mine isn't aware that her actions will impact the people around her. Ah. So she was sitting next to Becky, your wife, and I was watching those elbows flying around. She put her feet on the back of the chair and started bouncing her feet. I'm sitting there, I can see the person four seats down the row, their head moving, and I'm like...
Oh, no.
So I just kept telling her to stop moving, just sit still, watch the film. And her response was, I'm just so excited. I'm like, sit still. And after the movie, my wife, Miriam, asked me how it was. I went, I can't sit next to her. I just can't do it. It sucks the life out of me.
Oh, because you're having to monitor.
Because I'm having to
monitor.
Can't
enjoy the
movie. But the problem is she's unaware of what she's like. So we actually went to the theater in Yellowstone when we were there. And I had to move. Her sister had to move.
Oh, no.
It's just consistent. And she's like, what?
Was she sitting by herself eventually?
No, she sat there, but, you know, patience. But we did enjoy the movie. The girls, for the first time, got an icy. At the theater. And
they'd never had an icy before?
Oh, no, they've had an icy before.
But at the theater.
Never at the theater.
Okay.
I allowed them to get it. And that might cause... The problem that is a bouncing child
get
on the chair.
Sugar water on there.
Yeah. I had a pizza. So
I know you have an interesting like culinary exploratory habit at movie theaters.
I had a pizza.
I've seen you eat nachos. I've seen you eat pizza.
Yep.
Do you ever just do popcorn like the rest of us?
I hate popcorn.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I really don't like popcorn. I'll avoid at all costs. I like sour sweets, sour candy. I like a Coke. And recently, I think a pizza is a good idea to watch a movie. I really enjoyed it.
I've had a movie theater hot dog in the past. Movie theater hot dogs are all right.
Absolutely not. I've said this to someone this weekend, if it rolls in public, I don't want to eat it.
What
like hot dogs, they roll around.
Yeah, they're getting evenly cooked, distributed in the warmth.
100% hard no.
Okay.
Do you know what's coming out next year, which we went to see with our pastoral training residents last year?
Yeah.
Fast 10 Part
2. Oh, the second part. We get to see what happened to that car underwater.
Yeah, we're going to have to call back the pastoral residents and all go and watch it.
Do a little reunion.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it wasn't Despicable Me, but we saw, Beck and I went and saw the new M. Night Shyamalan movie called Trap.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard about this. And I have this long history of disappointment with Shyamalan. I liked his first three movies a lot. I think they're actually really, really great. Borderline masterpiece. But since then, something has happened. He's been alien abducted and body swapped or something because he's not made a good movie in 20-something years. Honestly. And I keep thinking, what? It's really bizarre. It's mind-boggling what has happened to him. So every time a movie comes out, we think, oh, maybe it's this time. And we go and we went to this movie, which is about this guy who takes his daughter to a concert and turns out the concert is a trap to catch a serial killer. He's the serial killer, the dad. At least that's what the commercials make you think. And I thought, oh, there's going to be a twist. There's not a twist. What you see in the commercials is the movie. And it's just so bad.
Yeah.
It's just so, so, so dumb.
Do you
and
know
so
what
bad.
Will make you really happy at the end of the year?
Okay.
Gladiator 2.
We'll see. I hope so.
Favorite line in the commercial, favorite line was Denzel Washington going, too much.
Too much?
Too much. When he says, what do you want? He's like, bring the whole Roman Empire down.
Yeah, yeah.
Too much.
Too much.
I'm really looking. Gladiator is my all-time favorite.
Those guys, Ridley Scott, Coppola's got a new movie coming out. They're like, they're getting up there. I feel like sometimes when they get really old, they lose their touch.
But Denzel Washington, name one movie he's done bad.
Well, I could name a few probably, but...
Let's not do
all
that.
All right. We're talking about the Lord's Supper today. I've got no transition.
There is no transition to that.
Yeah. Speaking of things that are old, I guess. I don't know. But that don't lose their touch.
You should have left at no transition.
Yeah, we've done a previous episode, Baptists on Baptism, and I thought, hey, why not talk about the other ordinance given to the church? Baptists on the Lord's Supper. And what's really interesting to me is where Baptists have staked their church experience around these ordinances of baptism and the Lord's Supper, there's still a variety of practice, even understanding, almost theological understanding, maybe, but just emphasis, theological emphasis of what the Lord's Supper means, what it does for the church, et cetera. And I see this in the pastoral ministry class when we start talking about these things and you have students who are kind of weighing in on the discussion. And it gets very lively sometimes when you ask questions like, can you use other elements other than bread and either grape juice or wine? Can you use, you know, grape soda and tortilla chips? And you have some students say, absolutely not. And you have others say, well, yeah, well, why not? Go for it. You know, why can't we use those things?
And you just say, fight.
That's right.
Just see what happens in class.
I get him in. Bow to your sensei. Now, go for it. Yeah, of course. So I thought it might be good for us to talk about the Lord's Supper. Yeah, you have a favorite perspective on... spiritual presence, real presence, consubstantiation, et cetera. We are, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say we are rejectors of transubstantiation.
Correct.
Which is that the elements, the bread and the wine, somehow physically transmogrify or whatever into the literal blood and flesh of Jesus Christ.
You
this
literally
is a Roman Catholic view.
Turned into a professor there.
Well, like when I said transmogrify, I don't know if I use that word right. But the podcast people don't know.
So what Jared just said there in layman's
terms.
They
literally transform at some part of the process, either through the consecration or in the consumption, into so we reject that.
Yeah, and that's based on, you know, this is my body, this mm-hmm. is my blood, and so
that's what our Roman Catholic
our
friends
Roman Catholics would
say. Would
say that this literally means that we are drinking Christ's blood and we're literally eating his body. We would reject that view.
I mean, he also said, if you want to live, John chapter 6, you must eat my flesh and drink my blood.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he said that directly.
Yeah.
But we understand him to be speaking spiritually.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm glad we agree on something.
Well, I assume we do. Historically, traditionally, the Baptist view, just in terms of, I guess, categorical understanding of what the elements are, would be a memorialist
yes.
view, that the elements are symbolic of Christ's flesh and blood, but that there is no
yeah.
spiritual magic taking place in those elements. But I would say, like, in the last number of years, we've had in, you know, some of the influence of, I guess, Reformed theology and others, not a moving into the kind of, you know, transubstantiationist view, but you're having some, I think, influence of maybe Lutheran consubstantiation sometimes, or the Calvinistic sort of spiritual presence, that sort of thing.
I would definitely say that even just in my time in the last, you know, 10 to 15 years of ministry, I would say the churches I've served have shifted from the, this is a memorial, this is just an act we do, to something definitely is happening
yes.
when we're doing this. And this is more than just an act. This is more than just a remembering. This is more than a proclamation. There's something special happening here. I would lean towards that. I don't think the elements are changing, but I do think, I'm trying to think of a kind of word to phrase this, like the feeling of presence is changing. It's a unifying thing as a church body to do. It is a unifying thing for yourself to Christ, and a unifying thing from yourself to your fellow believers in church. And I think that is a spiritual thing that is happening. I find it hard to put that in words. I don't like the word feeling, like you feel this
yeah.
because it's not about feeling, but there's definitely a change that is occurring when you're partaking in the Lord's Supper.
Yeah, the I think emphasis is in the phrase, or our understanding is in the shifting reception of the phrase means of grace.
Yes.
That the that the Lord's Supper is a means of grace. And for some, what means of grace means is that it's somehow contributing to our justification or it's somehow salvific. And some will, you know, even think of baptism that way. And Baptists do not affirm baptism or the Lord's Supper in that way. There's nothing salvific in the act itself. But when you think of other things as being a means of grace, which is just to say that the Lord uses these, you know, biblically prescribed, divinely ordained practices to strengthen our faith.
Yes.
Like, we wouldn't have any problem saying that preaching is a means of grace. When you hear the gospel preached, the Holy Spirit is using the word of God proclaimed to strengthen your faith, to conform you more to the character of Christ. Mm. So in that way, we'd say, you know, or we could say, the Lord's Supper is a means of grace. It's not contributing to your salvation. It's not contributing to your justification, I guess I should say. There's nothing salvific in receiving these elements, but the Lord is using the practice of the Lord's Supper to strengthen the church,
yes.
to remind us, right? First Corinthians chapter 11, where Paul says, as often as you receive this, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. If it is a picture of the gospel being proclaimed, then it is a practice of grace. It is something that's strengthening us and building us up, edifying us.
Taking that like comparison to preaching just that little bit further, why have we seen the Lord's Supper as an ordinance and baptism as an ordinance, but preaching is not? As in, you were kind of using preaching as the example there of that's what we do on Sunday. We proclaim the Lord, we proclaim the gospel, we speak into people's lives, and the Lord's Supper to some extent does the same thing. It proclaims the gospel, proclaims the good news, it proclaims that Christ is returning. Like, that's something I try to remind the church of when I lead the Lord's Supper, is that we're to do this until the Lord comes, like until the day that we see him again. So where's the difference there, if that makes sense? As in, why is this elevated as something we do higher than preaching?
Why is the Lord's Supper elevated?
Yeah.
I don't know that it is. Is it?
Oh,
elevated as something higher than preaching?
In
my experience, it's like relegated to every few months. It actually has a lesser.
Well, that's probably a good question then to ask.
Well, they would say because it's so special.
Yeah.
But when you don't practice it all that often, you wonder, is it really that special?
Yeah.
It's like Grammy's China, you know, you only bring it out on special occasions kind of thing.
I guess that's where I'm going to, is that if baptism is something that we're seeing as the kind of the welcoming into the church family, the this person has a statement placed against them that they are truly a believer, and the Lord's Supper is that proclamation that has been commanded of us. These are two very special things to Baptists very specifically. Do we elevate it high enough? Maybe is the question I'm trying to ask.
Yeah.
Because you compared it to preaching there and sitting in a seminary world. Multiple guys here want to take preaching classes. They want to hone their preaching skills, all these things.
Yeah.
So why are we talking about Lord's Supper specifically on a podcast? Why are we needing to elevate it? I guess that's what I'm trying to get. There's so many questions that answer any of them.
Well, I mean, the Lord instituted it, right, at his at the Last Supper as sort of, you know, whether it was a pre-Passover or a Passover meal, we can see it as sort of a fulfillment of the Passover meal, demonstrating for us that Christ is the fulfillment. He is the Passover lamb. And he says, do this in remembrance of me. And so we take him to be instituting this meal as a means of commemorating his death, as a means of proclaiming his death. And for him to say, do this in remembrance of me, and it be connected to the festival meal, to a traditional meal, then we would see, he's actually not just saying every now and again when you think about it, but he's actually saying this should be part of your practice to remember me this way.
And I think that is where the spiritual element is in the partaking of it. I think that's the key thing for me, is that this is a direct command from the Lord of how we draw close to him and remember him as a body of believers. To me, that's where the special element is occurring. And I think that's kind of what I was trying to get to.
I got you.
Is that because the Lord has directly called us to do this in remembrance of him, in proclamation of him, in leading us towards forgiveness, 1 Corinthians 11, and leading us to eat in a worthy manner and to actually live the life that this represents. I think that's the special moment, is that certainly for me, that I'm leading people quite literally to the cross of Christ in that moment as believers. And I think we so often forget that believers need to be led to the cross of Christ. And that's why it's instituted for as often as you meet. So here would be my next question. Why don't we have it every Sunday?
Yeah, why don't we? I mean, in the churches I grew up in, it was maybe once a quarter.
That would be the same for me.
And the rationale was always, because it's so special, we don't want to turn it into like a routine thing and empty of its specialness. And, you know, and I just always took that at face value. Yeah. Looking back now, I think a couple of things. Number one, we don't say that about any other element of the church service. We don't say, hey, let's not sing for a few weeks.
Because it's so special.
So we can make sure it's really special when we do.
Yeah.
We don't do that. Hey, how about let's not have a sermon for a few weeks? So we make sure it's really special when we do. We don't do that. And yet here's something the Lord has commanded us to do. I don't know that we have a command to weekly communion, but historically, a church tradition is that the church is organized around the right preaching of the gospel and the right exercise of the ordinances or practice of the ordinances. And so weekly observance of the Lord's Supper has historical traditional precedent there. And so the practice of moving it to quote unquote special occasions or just once every 3 months or at members meetings or something is outside of the historical record. Yeah. So in a lot of churches, the Lord's Supper is the culminating gospel event of the service, and you preach to the Lord's Supper.
Yes.
Your preaching is to culminate in this. Now we receive what the Lord has provided for us in response to hearing the good news of Jesus proclaimed.
I think that's partly for me, probably the subconscious reason why we don't do it as often.
Yeah. And more and more churches are doing it more often, doing it weekly.
I mean, I visited a church not so long ago, and they're doing it weekly, and they've had to really change how they do their service so that they can ensure they do it weekly. But I think it's one of those things of, I think preaching leads to it. I think if you're preaching Christ, if you're turning eyes to the gospel, then it seems the natural thing to do is to then go to the Lord's Supper, because that is the prior to his crucifixion, this is what we're to do, to have this seen as the supper we're to have. So I think in that sense, the question of why are we not having it as often, I think there's always the pragmatic things. It's the time.
Yeah.
It takes time in a church. How do you do this? All those sorts of things. But I often wonder, is it because we're maybe just not as gospel focused as we think we are?
I think the answer to that question is yes.
Yeah.
And I also just think like the time it takes to do it, well, you're making time for other things.
Oh, yeah.
So
announcements.
And you're making time for things that are sometimes extra biblical. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't we make time for whatever it would take for something that is biblical and actually mandated by the Lord, you know?
And during the summer, I was an interim pastor and we moved the church from two services to one. And by doing that, we were essentially doubling the amount of people that we were serving the Lord's Supper to. And we had a bit of a panic the first time we did it. It was like, do we have enough elements? Do we have enough cups? And what we realized is it took more time. And we had kind of a fairly hard stop of the service at 11:30. And on this particular Sunday, I think we did like 11:35. We went over by 5 minutes. And when we shared that with the church as to the reasonings why we had taken longer that Sunday, essentially because the Lord's Supper just took more time to serve, no complaints, because there was that understanding of course it's going to take longer. There's more of us here. Mm-hmm. And there was that sense of, well, if we don't make it a big deal, then it's not a big deal, if that makes sense. It takes longer. Yes, we need more elements. Yes, we need more servers. Okay. You know, all those things I went to I don't know if this would be defined as a mega church, 1,000 people in attendance, I guess.
It used to be. I don't know if it is anymore.
Mini mega. They do the Lord's Supper every single Sunday, and they split the church in terms of service into like 50 people blocks, and they have a person to serve each 50 people block. Okay. And it took 10 minutes. And you were thinking 10 minutes to serve 1,000 people. And it was just like trying to figure out, how do we do this? So I think if you're saying we don't do it because of logistics, honestly, you can do it. It's just you have to start thinking you want to do it. If it's because it's extra special, I think you're right. I think there's just like a weirdness to saying that almost, which means it boils down to desire. Like, do we desire to come around the Lord's table together and proclaim together his sacrifice for us? For me, I wonder why we would say no to that, do you know?
Yeah, and I mean, this is me being cynical, but it's certainly more biblical and more important than whatever extra special song you maybe have. And, you know, maybe you got to cut some corners in some places, but or maybe your service needs to be another 15 minutes
15
long.
15 minutes longer, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, is it really, you know, what's more important, the efficiency of the consumer product that we're trying to produce? Or commemorating the Lord's death until he comes.
And, have lunch 15 minutes later, do you know?
Right.
This is a question I had personally never heard until I came to seminary. So I don't think this is linked to Baptist, but I think this is linked to Lord's Supper. The nature of closed, and open. And I don't know if that was just my naivety in early ministry that I was unaware of this.
Yeah.
But do we want to explain what we mean by close, closed and open?
Yeah. Well, in most of the churches that I have been a part of previously, we practice what would be called open communion.
That was the same for me.
And there's usually varieties even within these three categories. And so for open communion, there is such a thing where it's extremely open, where you just say, if you want to receive the Lord's Supper, this is for you. Come and receive it. There's no amount of, maybe there's explanation of what it represents, but there's no explanation of like who should receive it, who's restricted from receiving it, that sort of thing. It's just open to whoever. Now, there's some churches that really practice an extreme version of open communion. It's for everyone, regardless of whether you believe or not. Jesus died for you, therefore come receive it.
Yep.
There's some places where they'll say this is for Christians or something like that.
Yeah.
But the idea generally is they're leaving it more upon the discretion of those who are in attendance, whether they're members or not members, or you know, members of that church or members of another church or not. You just, if you want to receive it, you come receive it, and there's no what we call fencing of the table. Then there's closed, the opposite extreme of that is closed communion, which there's a spectrum of practice here. But generally, closed communion is you must be a member of the administrating church to receive the
elements. And that's what Spurgeon was known for.
I didn't know that.
He would give tickets. So when you became a member, because the church was huge, when you became a member, you got a member ticket. And that was to say that, like, I'm part of this church. And that when you arrived to church for that Lord's Supper that particular week, you would hand over your ticket to say, I am a member of this church. Okay. So it wasn't like, if you're a ticket, you're in. It was just more, it was an easy way for 5,000 people
to identify who's,
a member. And if you didn't have a ticket, then you've probably not had a members meeting and become a member. So he was known for ticketing.
I wonder if they ever had people selling tickets or you'd go on eBay. I'm going to buy some of those Spurgeon tickets.
I bet you there's probably tickets somewhere.
You know what? I'm not going to be able to make it this Sunday. You want to use my tickets? Like it's a Royals game, you know?
But that was essentially fencing the Lord's Supper. It was saying only those that we know are members, which for them was if you have your ticket, then
And some people really, like when we discussed this in my class, there's some folks you can kind of see them recoil a little bit, the idea that, oh gosh, only members of this church. But the rationale is that you have shepherds who are administrating this ordinance. And they want to be able to administer it to those that they are giving an account for, those that they know you're in good standing, you're a member of this church. We think it is so special and so sacred that we're not wanting to even take the chance of administering it to someone who may receive it in an unworthy manner or who should not receive it because we're trying to guard the table and protect it well. And then there's what's called close communion, so closed but with the D off, so close communion. And there's a spectrum here, but generally close communion is you don't have to be a member of our church, but you need to be a member in good standing of a local church where they preach the gospel. Some will make a, like at our church, we will say, you know, you've been baptized by immersion as a believer. Some will say, well, you can be Presbyterian and be visiting our Baptist church, but if you're a member of that Presbyterian church in good standing, you can receive the Lord's Supper here. Close is essentially to say you need to be a member of a church because that's who the body of Christ is for. And this maybe leads into the idea of fencing the table, which when I first encountered this phrase years ago, I thought, gosh, you're like really barring people, like slapping the elements out of people's hands. And it really just means you're announcing who it's for and who it's not for.
And I think if you practice a close Lord's Supper, the reality is it's open with a conviction placed on someone's heart. Like what you're saying is we can't place
this. You're leaving
this.
It to the liberty of someone's conscience,
And if someone's conscience partakes without that, then that's on them, not on the leader, which is why I think we do have more churches moving more towards the closed because they recognize that's really the only way that I don't want to use the word police it, but there's the only way they can really manage that. So I never really encountered this till a few years ago because the churches I led were always just open with a, this is for believers. That was where we were. I probably now personally would lean to the close. I think it's a beautiful thing. I know you do this, I do this, we do pulpit supply. It's a beautiful thing when we get to share the Lord's Supper with fellow believers of the same tribe, if you will, of mainly cover SBC churches. It's a beautiful thing to be able to share the Lord's Supper with them and kind of be like, hey, from my family to your family type thing. that's a wonderful thing. I have one more question. I don't know if you have any... Anything you want to just interject?
Well, I've just got a list of agenda items, but we'll see. Your questions have been overlapping with those.
Great. So, good to know. it's funny that I took your class and maybe have this in mind. I want to talk about elements in terms of just the practicalities of that. So first church I ever served had a single cup that we passed around.
Yeah, common cup.
Common cup. I'm just going to lay it out there. I think the most disgusting thing I've ever experienced. So that was that. And
are you not one body, Ross?
I mean,
you're one body, you know.
And our one body was sick. Like, let's just put that. Okay. But that church moved to separate individual cups actually when there was a lady that was pregnant and she felt that she couldn't partake because she was struggling a bit in pregnancy and really wanted to stay safe in terms of germs and all these sorts of things. So really moved to multiple individual cups. I've been in churches where they've just picked whatever loaf is off the shelf, cut it up. I've been in churches that do naan bread, and I've been in churches that do the weird biscuity, dissolvey
things. Like the little wafer.
The wafer thing. Things. Yeah, uh-huh. So talk about elements. Like how should we do this? Is there rules? Is there best practices? Should we have leavened bread, unleavened bread? Like how far do we take these things?
That's a big question. I don't personally have a preference on leavened or unleavened. I prefer, if I'm just talking about like preference, personal preference, prefer the unleavened bread, not just biblically, but there's just something to the breaking of it. It's not soft. It breaks.
Yeah.
So I like that, but I don't think that biblically necessarily it necessarily matters. I think where you get into trouble is when people start getting a little cutesy with the elements. So it's not bread at all. It's something else that we're going to use. Hey, youth group kids, we're going to really have a cool Lord's Supper tonight because the Lord meets us wherever we're at. Yeah. So we're going to have, you know, great Kool-Aid and whatever. You know, that to me is like, it's distracting. It distracts from what the Lord has given us.
Yeah.
A related debate, I don't know if you have an opinion on this, is wine versus grape juice. So I was just preaching at a church in New York recently where they were sharing that they would like to move to wine at some point. They don't have, you know, it's not an imminent decision, but because they feel like the Lord gave the instructions and it's wine. That's what they use. So why would we depart from that? And I can think of some reasons why you might would depart from that. Yeah. I don't see a huge distinction between the fruit of the grape or the juice from the grape and wine. Unfermented. It's just unfermented. Yeah. I've heard the arguments about why you should use the fermented and use wine, not just because Jesus said wine or gave wine, but because the bitterness of the wine is the bitterness of the cross. My response to that is it's bitter to him, but it's sweet to us, the cross. So why not? I can think of reasons for those who struggle with alcohol either by conviction or addiction issues and they in just a taste, you know, might be leading them into temptation of some kind. I would hope that any church that moves to wine would at least offer the, you know, grape juice as an alternative.
Yep.
And also if you've got those who are younger than 21, if you've got members under the legal age to drink, and I know it's just a little thimble or something, but
still want to.
Allowing people's conscience, you know, that you're not binding someone's conscience there.
I think it's interesting that we'll debate that, but maybe not necessarily the bread.
Interesting.
It's interesting.
Yeah, what do you think? Do you think it needs to be unleavened bread?
And I agree with you. I like a kind of snap or crust or something like that. I really don't like the wafers personally.
Yeah, some are better than others, but there's been ones, the ones that come in the prepackaged cup, it's like a little piece of styrofoam.
Yeah, I don't get that. So I think at Liberty, we use like naan bread type.
It's almost like a pita type.
Pita bread or something like that. And I quite like that in that sense. Honestly, I don't really have a preference as long as it's kind of bread. I'm kind of like it needs to be that. In terms of the cup, my dad was an alcoholic. And when he became a Christian, stopped drinking alcohol. And he actually was really terrified of taking communion, taking the Lord's Supper, and actually had to approach the pastors to say, I don't know what to do here. If I take that, I feel like I'm going back into the world of sin. And they at that time said, well, you don't need to worry about it. It's grape juice. You'll be fine. That was like 20 plus years ago. Literally 3 or 4 months ago, I had my first ever experience of going to a church where they had a table for each.
Yeah, okay.
A table for grape juice. And it literally said grape juice. And on the other side, it said wine. And to some extent, I think that's the middle ground. You are saying convictionally, we're going to partake, but it's up to you as to which one you choose. And again, we already do that with gluten-free. And that can be a conviction as well as a health issue.
Sure.
But it's one of those things of if you're going to move to wine, I think you should be offering a non-alcoholic version. For me, in my last church I served, we did gluten-free bread and non-alcoholic wine. And it was just the easiest way to say, pretty much if you're a Christian, you should be able to take these elements.
Yeah.
There shouldn't be a physical fallen world reason why you can't take these elements. And to us, that felt like the act of the grace that we're receiving in this element, we can be gracious in how we're giving it out.
Yeah. Procedurally, we have announced before that there are gluten-free option available. And it always sounds weird. People always like snicker and laugh, which is interesting that people would do that. Yeah. But it just, I think it's just because it lands odd. You're giving this what the meal means and how we're going to receive and everything. And there are gluten-free options. And people are like, you know, laugh. Why not just do it all gluten-free so that gluten-free people don't have to worry, you know, think about it.
I'm literally right there.
And it doesn't matter that anybody, like, if you're okay to eat gluten, it doesn't matter that, that you've eaten a gluten-free thing. Just make it so that, you know, the widest number of people can receive it and do that, you know.
That's what I'm a big believer of. So even just another logistic is I've been in churches where you hand out the elements up and down the rows. And then I've been in churches.
Let's talk about this because I had processes on my list.
Okay.
Do you think it matters, the process in which we receive it?
So I used to say no.
Okay.
And I used to say I had like a preference. And my preference would be that you go up and get it rather than you hand it out, you know, person to person.
Yeah, you pass the trays or whatever. Yeah.
I now shift more towards, yes, I think there is something in there. But I don't want to be too prescriptive. This is like very much a personal opinion. I really like when the leaders of the churches, your elders, your pastors are actually at the front giving those elements. Mm. I think there's something in the under shepherds giving and the congregants, the members, the sheep receiving. I think there's something beautiful in that picture. Now, I'm not saying I think that's prescribed. I just think there's a beauty in that picture that maybe we could lean into. I also love at Liberty, we kind of all filter forward, take the elements, as in pick them up, go back to our seats, and then we take them together. And I think there's a beauty in watching your church going forward. Like, these are my brothers and sisters, and you're praying through like the people you're seeing. Oh, there's so-and-so. I know they've had a hard week. I'm praying for them as they pick up their elements. But I think there's also a beauty in the passing the plate to the believer next to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, like that, and growing up, I would have heard, you know, the body of Christ broken for you and you would pass the plate, or the blood of Christ shed for you and you would pass the cup or the individual cup. So I think personally, I like the going forward. I think there is beauty in being served by my pastors. And I think that adds something to it. So that would be now, I think that would be, if I was to lead it, that's the way I would go. But I can totally see the preference of then handing to a brother or sister.
I think there's pros and cons. There's a spiritual significance, I think, to either side. And I just wish wherever churches landed that they have put thought into it more than just what's the easiest
way to get
efficient
these
way to do it. So as you said, at Liberty Baptist, we go forward. There are two stations up front. There is someone who will bring, for those who are unable to get up, you know, elderly and disabled, there's someone who will bring the elements to them where they sit, but most everyone else stands and moves forward and receives and comes back. And there's something to that, you know, come to the table, come anyone who thirsts, you know, that sort of thing. I like the passing the tray, you know, the plate, you know, the plates out. The idea that grace comes to you, that we're unable, you know, we're dead in our sins and the gospel comes to us, you know, the Lord came and visited us. I like that significance. I also just think practically, when there are those, for instance, at our church where we say, you know, if you're not a member, you're not a believer, you know, a member of a church in good standing, we would ask that you would refrain. Well, now if you're standing to come forward, you're having to sometimes walk past people who are seated or kind of climb over them if you're in a tight row or something. Yeah. Whereas if you're just passing a tray, it's much easier to just, I'm not taking it, but I'm passing the tray, you know, pass me. So I wonder, even like practically, maybe it's a little less clumsy or a problem there. But like you, I'm not dogmatic about either one. I just wish churches would put more thought into, why do we do what we do?
Yeah.
And is it more of a consideration than just what's easiest or most efficient?
Yeah, I think where I kind of shifted a little bit was post-COVID world in the UK. So our church had been physically closed for a very long time and part of the UK-based rules. And when we returned and the first time we did the Lord's Supper together, I led the church leaders to, you know, everyone was sitting in a second row and each row was kind of empty, all those sorts of things. I led the church leaders themselves to go up and down each row and hand the elements to each person because after not seeing the church for so long, I felt like that was a visual of your under shepherds really do care for you. Mm-hmm. And we really want to draw you to Christ. So we're going to individually serve you as our those that we give an account for. And I remember just when I was doing that, I was thinking purely in a almost like a visual thing. But when I experienced it there, I thought, wow, this is a really powerful thing to humbly, as a leader, serve the people that I'm to lead towards Christ.
Yeah.
So I think I have that in my, like the pastor's brain, if you will, that I want to be able to do that. But I think for the members themselves, oh man, I think there really is beauty in passing that plate and saying, like, this is for you as much as it is for me.
Yeah.
As long as you're not saying like, this is more for you because you need it this week, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Let's get real controversial here.
Okay, here
this
we go.
This is the most controversial point. Whenever I make it on social media, I am the sufferer of people's controversial responses to my takes. Where can we receive the Lord's Supper?
Okay, so
do you? I don't know. I don't know that we've ever really discussed this. So I don't know if your view.
I have an answer with one caveat.
Oh, okay.
My answer is the regular meeting of the body of believers.
Okay.
So
I would agree.
Basically, that will end up being a Sunday morning, or potentially a Sunday evening, potentially even a members' meeting.
Yeah.
But it's where
where the body is gathered.
The body's gathered together. I have one caveat, and that is for shut-ins. And I would have that as, and just to be clear, true shut-ins. I'm not talking about they were sick this week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm talking about people that have physically been unable to leave the hospital or to leave their home. What I have done in the past is I've taken the elements and other church members with me, either church leaders, elders with me, or a few members to say, you know, I'm taking the Lord's Supper to them. And usually I would have tried to do it on the same day that we partook as the main body. So if we did it on the Sunday morning, I'm trying to visit the hospital that Sunday night. I'm trying to kind of say like, we did this together. I've also heard of churches actually sending people to the shut-ins on the very morning they're doing it. So they don't attend church, they attend the hospital or something like that, with the idea of trying to do it as close together as we possibly could. That would be my only caveat. And I have friends that would be like, 100% anti that, as in it's just where the regular gathering is. So that would be my only caveat. Outside of that, the answer is no. I wouldn't do it in a community group. I wouldn't do it in a small group. I wouldn't do it as a couple of brothers just meeting together regularly. I wouldn't do it because this particular prayer meeting, you just feel like that's what you should do because it would draw us close to Christ.
Right.
And I'm not necessarily mocking all of that. I'm saying, where was it that Jesus instituted it? He instituted it with the people that he had been with for 3 years. Mm-hmm. He instituted it when they were all there. Even the guy that was going to betray him was present in the environment. And it was that sense of, then you go to the New Testament, where did they do it? Well, 1 Corinthians 11 says it was at the gathering. And where was the problems? Well, at the gathering, people were being treated differently, but it was always at the gathering of the Lord's people. So yeah, I think if your Sunday school class is doing it or whatever, like, I'm a no. It's where the regular gathering, the largest gathering of the body of believers. And I might add another caveat, which it's not really partaking it. I have taught it as well at like a missions college, and I've taught it to students. And in that moment, there's an element where we were kind of teaching them how to actually lead this.
Oh yeah.
So in that sense, I kind of felt like we were doing it. Do you know?
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Cause we were like physically teaching them how to do it. They never led something like that.
Oh.
So at the college, we actually sat down and we had the Lord's Supper together at the college.
Gotcha.
I don't know if I would do that again. I don't know. It felt like a training situation, do you know? I don't even know.
Like practicing baptisms.
Yeah. Well, I've done that before well. Cold water is always the best way to do in practicing. So would you be the same with that kind of like main body with a caveat, or would you not feel comfortable with
the
caveat?
No, and I'm open to the caveat, and I've made that exception before. And like you, I've got friends that say, no, you really shouldn't even make exceptions, but I can just see, you know, Christ left the 99 to go to the one. And when you've got someone who legitimately is homebound, to say they can never receive the Lord's Supper, I would sympathize and be able to say, I could see a pastor or some members taking it to them. But aside from that, you know, 1 Corinthians 11, when you come together to eat, wait for one another.
Yes.
I do think this is an ordinance of the body to be received by the body. Mm-hmm. So at the regular gathering, So no retreats, no weddings, no those sorts of things.
Unless
the whole church is present.
I was about
present.
To say, unless the whole church has gone on this retreat. Right. I'll give an example of the caveat. I had one lady that had a really severe leg issue that meant she physically really struggled to walk. Mm. And she could be on months on end. She would be at home. And it was a really bad issue. She actually passed away due to sepsis from this particular injury. And it was a wife of one of the church leaders. And we would take the Lord's Supper to her usually on the Monday, because that's when she was available. So the next day, and we would have the Lord's Supper there together. And I would do exactly the same readings, exactly the same verses, exactly the same speech, if you will, that I did on the Sunday. I wouldn't change it. I would be trying to say the same things to her as I would have said to the church body. And I think there's just a beauty in that.
Any funny Lord's Supper stories you've got?
Oh, my word. I mean,
I don't have really, I've got like a couple that are amusing.
I really struggle with the words bread, bled, and bed.
Okay.
So when we break this bed, it's not good to say at the Lord's Supper. This is the blood that Jesus bred, no bled for us. I really struggled with that. Probably the funniest one was when I passed out a tree and I leaned it a little bit too much and poured pretty much half of every cup on a person's lap.
Oh my word.
Which just happened to be cream in color. So they were scarlet as red by the time we had finished.
They bared on their body the brand marks of Jesus Christ.
Do you know you can't even recover from that? So I just kind of, they looked at me and they were, obviously it's quiet and nobody's trying to say anything. I just gave them the tray and walked away because I'm like, what do you do? Like you got to serve the church the Lord's Supper. So yeah, that's why generally I don't like the passing.
Okay.
Because I have spilt on somebody. Yeah.
I remember the first time I was at a church where they used, it wasn't one common cup, but it was stations.
Okay.
And each station
had
was
a
one
common
cup.
Yeah.
So regardless of which station you went to, that's a cup that other people are using. Yeah. And it just kind of took me back because I just never experienced that. And so I went up to the station and they had this chalice and the person who was serving it had a little handkerchief.
Uh-huh.
And so after every person would drink, they would kind of wipe the rim and then turn it.
Because of course that does something.
So you're getting and I read a paper once upon a time where somebody did like the germ factor for, and they say if you're using alcoholic wine and you have a silver, I think it was a silver chalice, it really is, it's disinfecting and it's not passing things on, so it's relatively safe. But I don't know. I've never been in the church that actually used that. But that's probably the only funny.
Yeah.
I can remember when I was a little kid, and I'm talking like 5-6 years old, and my church would have the Lord's Supper, and they would have the trays and everything, silver trays and everything's up on the table, the communion table, and they would be covered with a white cloth.
Yes.
And I remember once hearing that the Lord's body is under there. And I remember thinking, Jesus's body is under the
the things he's doing.
The white thing. And I just was like mortified that there was a body under that. They lift this white thing and Jesus's body is going
to
be under there. It was like the Shroud of Turin or something. But other than that, don't really have anything.
Thinking
funny.
About the Lord's Supper, though, and watch this for a transition.
Okay.
It makes me think of the For the Church National Conference.
I just pulled that webpage up on my computer.
Because the title and the theme of this year's For the Church National Conference is Faithful, Serving the Most Beautiful People on Earth. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things you can do is to serve the Lord's Supper to faithful believers and say, this is what it's about. It's all about Christ and this is what he did for you. So if you do want to attend the For the Church National Conference, it's on September 23rd and 24th of this year in 2024. Our own very much Jared Wilson will be speaking at it amongst others. I feel like I should put you first.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Because on everything else, you're on sixth.
Yeah, so I come on last.
On the FTC podcast, you're first. Night. But on everything else, you're last.
Well, the last shall be first. So.
But yeah, September 23rd, 24th, you can register for tickets now. And you can have more conversations like we've had about what it looks like to serve the most beautiful people on earth.
Yeah, I mean, other speakers include, of course, our president, Dr. Jason Allen, but Crawford Loritz, Kevin Izzell, Tony Marita, JT English. We've got worship this year led by Matt Boswell.
Matt Boswell, yeah.
It's going to be fantastic. There is a women's pre-conference led by Jen Wilkin. There's a number of breakout sessions. There's even a student pastor summit that mm-hmm. occurs right before the conference as well. It's always sold out. So if you're interested, yep. make sure you get your tickets soon, September 23rd and 24th. Go to mbts.edu/FTC24.
Well done.
mbts.edu/FTC24. Nobody told us to do this ad.
No, we're just
We sat down
it.
And Ross said, we should advertise the conference. Yeah. And I thought, oh, yeah,
and
we
could
do that.
You could even walk past the booth and see where we record this episode.
Oh, man, the hallowed... studio.
Jared, we could stand at the door and signatures.
And knock.
We could knock. We could sign things like you know.
Now we're getting a little too big for our britches.
We could make it all about us, do you know?
Well, we could.
but we're not going to.
But you know what is all about us? A good review.
Good reviews.
So if you like the podcast, leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church. You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co. This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.